Top of the top, top of the morning. Welcome to the Bedroom to Boardroom podcast. This is your host, AJ. Throughout this podcast, we'll be sitting down with people from our community who are making moves, really deep diving into their success stories, understanding their background, their trials and tribulations, things they've had to overcome, really with the focus of, you know, motivating a new generation, hopefully giving you some tangible insights for you to actually act on. So nevertheless, you know, stay tuned. To dive into that, I was very curious how somebody studies philosophy and then wins the Met and becomes a detective. I didn't really see that as a
it's not a prerequisite for becoming a detective, that's for sure. I'll give you a really condensed version, but I grew up North London, Enfield and Tottenham, and I was like a RAF cadet. So I wanted to join the RAF, but quite frankly, I was never going to be a pilot. That's just fact. My maths was never the best. I have very different skill sets for very many different things. But yeah, I wasn't like an A-star student for physics or chemistry or biology. So sure, it was never going to happen. Told my mum, look, I want to still join the RAF. She was like, no chance. You're going to go to university. I was like, oh, do I have to? So I did. I had a choice between psychology, which was an area of interest, or philosophy. Because again, I enjoy reading. A lot, and I thought, yeah, psychology is a little bit more clinical from my point of view, and it's a made-up science, and philosophy is completely made up, but it's logically made up. So I thought, yeah, just do that, go up to Manchester, have 3 years worth of wine and talking rubbish, which was fine. Then officially got that certificate, get the picture from my mum, put it on the wall. I'm like, mum, I'm an adult now. I can do whatever I want. So what I wanted to do was still kind of like discover myself, find out about the world. And I then became a Royal Marine for 5 years because I thought, yeah, you know what? Let's do this. I mean, it was great. Lots of things learned. It was hard. Lots of things done. And I'd always kind of put in the back of my mind that I wanted to be a police officer. So left and joined the Met. And then from then on, just did my normal stuff, public order, safer neighborhoods, CID, large investigations. So yeah, it's got nothing to do with my degree, as with most non-vocational degrees, right? Do you know what I mean? Unless you are genuinely going to have...
And again, maybe we're going into a bit too personal here, so apologies if I overstepped.
No. Never apologize. I ask personal questions all the time.
You compartmentalize being a police officer? I'm coming from like North London, where I guess let me use my personal experience. Southeast London. My experience with the police officers was never quite positive. How do you compartmentalize joining a force which is historically institutionally racist? How do you face that day to day? How do you compartmentalize that?
You don't do that at all. What you do is a challenge. So yeah, I could be one of two things, right? And again, I was stopped and searched many times. I still do, to be fair. And I just think, I brush it off. I get it. It's stereotyping, right? Biases. And unfortunately, it's not even unconscious biases. It's conscious biases, right? And I think I'm lucky enough to be able to be eloquent in my reasoning. Don't get me wrong, I've still got the accent, right? So people just still think I'm a rude boy. So sometimes you have to kind of go over the top. So I just deal with it from the inside. I was involved with the Stephen Lawrence, like now, not the inquiry, I'm not that old, but there was the 25th year celebration.
My mother still won't let me go to Eltham. If I tell her I'm going to Eltham, she still gets scared.
I don't blame you. I wouldn't. It's just, you know, like you said, it's hidden. It's the little waves but beneath. It's not the storm as it used to be, because people used to love to show off that they were racist. But now it's underneath, isn't it? But I just tackle it from the inside, because again, I lecture detectives around investigation techniques, investigative mindsets, etc. So I tell them and I show them by example, right? Sure, like you said, there is still, in any large institution and the police, there is still institutional racism. But now those people are running scared, but they still have the positions of power. So I don't ignore it. I deal with it and I say, well, I will do the job that I can do. And, you know, people will still slag you off for stuff. It's never going to change, but I don't want to be that kind of victim. And I've lost a few friends along the way, don't get me wrong.
Sure.
Again, people, you know, where I grew up, but at least they have a certain amount of respect to go, well, he's done what he needs to do. And yeah, I'm still getting, I'll give you an example. So I still don't like most of the police. That's fact. I was down in Ponderzen. I don't know if you know it. Unfortunately, my one of my best friend's dad passed away a few days back. So couldn't go to the funeral, but we had to go afterwards to obviously just like a bit of a wake with social distancing in place. Went to Tesco's Extra. And it was nasty. Like, people are queuing up. I'm thinking, okay, there's something going on. There's a lady, a Somalian lady, pushing a massive trolley in one of the self-service checkouts. You know, you take a basket or a smaller trolley.
And it's shoplifted.
Yeah, exactly. There's just some rubbish going on. I'm like, oh, I'm just here to buy some flowers, a card, and pay my respects. Things happen. They start shouting and screaming. And I kind of think something's going to happen. He passes her. He says one last word. She turns around and spits on him. And I'm thinking, firstly, why are you doing that? Secondly, I have to get involved. You know, I'm still a police officer. You have to act. Long and short, I was in a position to deal as an arrest or whatever else. But I had to call then my colleagues, the police, to come down. And two things that disappointed me the most is they said, well, you're there, so you deal with it. I'm like, well, firstly, it's a Sunday. Secondly, I'm off duty. And thirdly, I haven't got any handcuffs, or I'm not taking a woman that's just spat at someone in my own car. That's not how it's working. And the other factor is they just didn't turn up. I checked the call afterwards and they just didn't turn up. So I'm still disappointed by the actions of how the police is working. Because we're just using things as an excuse. So again, I don't let that drive me down. In fact, I started a company to predict crime, right? If I was so aggrieved by the institutional racism, I'd be there on the protests. And I agree with some of the protests, you know what I mean? Like,
I disagree.
We're both from the background, right? And I don't need to tell you any more about it. But I don't then need to be a victim and not do anything about it.
It's a question I would ask. No, that was thank you so much. So when you join these institutions, I feel with most industries or most young people, you have this idyllic ideologies of how the world should be. And then the more time you spend in these institutions, and I'll take the Met, for example, because some of my friends have joined the Met. In those very, very first maybe years or so, it's a gang. It's an indoctrination. I've had friends leave group chats because our subject matter wasn't appropriate to the lifestyle they were now in, which I don't know what that means personally. The question is, how did you navigate, rise, first of all, and do two things? One, I guess, not compromise on yourself and your integrity, but ultimately not lose yourself in this system, because I do see some police officers in senior positions who aren't the necessarily regular racial profile, i.e. white men, and you speak to them and their reaction to me as a young black male is one of aggression. In fact, I guess if you speak to any young black men, they will tell you the police officers who you have the most friction with is black police officers, the older ones who it seems, and correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe I'm using the wrong language, who seems they have made a conscious decision. They have decided to acclimate to this Western ideology. And as a result, they have, you know, sold out their negritude, so to speak. They've disavowed their negritude and they're focused on carrying the water of white supremacy. And as a result, you are, as a young black male, an opposition in their life, and they provide nothing but hassle.
No. It's spot on. Again, it's hard. It would be very difficult to generalize to everyone and unfair. But certainly I take your point and certainly I agree with it. I guess it comes down to one of two ways, right? Like if you're, I don't know, what's the best kind of analogy? If you're trying to reach, or sorry, if you're trying to play a game of chess, you ain't going to come in there with a game of checkers, are you? Right? You have to stick by the rules of that game. And whether or not you want to play the game of chess, whether or not you're any good at it, you have to obviously front up that you are. Secondly, you have to learn the rules. And thirdly, sometimes you just have to be a pawn, right? And a lot of the time, because of the frictions, because of the clear racial tensions that exist, people have to either get on board or not. If they're going to succeed, they have to jump on that boat, right? For me personally, I've got more in and out of my life than just the police, right? Sure, it is a vocation if you think about it, and it is a calling. And like you said, there are some friends you can make, some genuine lifelong friends. You know, you can be in the police for 30 years or more, and that in itself is completely strange compared to any other job. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's, you're there day to day, you're there kind of, like you said, acclimatizing to the whole place. So if they don't have anything on the outside, and I'm not saying they have principles of integrity, but if they don't have independence of thought and they have a good circle of friends, family around them, they are only then going to be police officers in and out of the job. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that they can associate with. Black people, you're right. Maybe because we're recruiting the wrong type of black people, BAME backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, we're only targeting kind of low-hanging fruit. And that sounds bad because I'm part of the low-hanging fruit myself.
Sure.
But I chose to be it as opposed to being recruited. And just like any other large organization who needs to make a quota, they are just going to get people that are going to meet that quota. They're not going to necessarily get the best. Because if you're just saying, I actively want the best BAME people, right? You're going to actively go to Cambridge, Oxford, Manchester, Durham, wherever else you're going to go, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to say, I want these people, as opposed to going, look, I want to increase by 20% or 25% the BAME representation. So I'm just going to put it out to the general population. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're going to put an advert out in the Sun, you're going to get X amount of people. If you're going to put the advert out in the Guardian or Telegraph, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm incorrect in my assessment, but I keep myself because I have friends outside the job. I don't see myself as like a stereotypical cop. I still want to make a difference. But again, I've been lucky to see the world for what it is, right? And some people don't. And they get all, yeah, I you know, you said it, it's an ideology, isn't it, about something. And when the reality hits, it's too late. They're already friends there. They already have the only people that you mix with every single day, just cops. And white cops at that. So they forget where they came from. They forget other people's struggles. And I'm not forgetting that. I'm from Mauritius, mate. I was born in Mauritius, a third world country. It, you know, it's still a developing country. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Tottenham, right? Seven Sisters, again, if you know it or not. You know, my whole interactions with police weren't negative, but it wasn't positive. You know, stopped and searched for no good reason. I got called a Turkish male once. I get it. I look a different way. Also. And I'm like, are you serious? You know what Turks look like? And I could have been the same stereotype going down, you know, whatever, the police are this, whatever, the authorities this. But I choose not to. I choose to take a higher ground and say to people, look, I'm not the best. They're not the best. But at least I'm trying. What are you doing? So that's my take on it anyway. You know?
I agree. So I've been fortunate enough to speak to like some good police officers, right? So to speak, I don't like the terminology good or bad. I'd say some police officers who are doing good for the community. And it's allowed me to maybe shift my ideology somewhat. Before I was very staunch anti-police. But now I realize that ultimately there are some, again, that terminology, good apples in the bunch. So thank you for this conversation. It was
no,
great.
No. Thanks for letting me talk it through. It's hard to have a frank conversation from both sides, or more importantly, like you said, from your background, it's hard for you to, some people from your background, to be open. Mm. And, you know, it's a credit to people that can have a conversation. I don't know why we've lost that art of talking. You know?
People are scared because, I guess, a few things. One, people are scared to open, actually two, for a few things. One, people have been dumbed down by social media and the media, and people lack critical thinking. Two, people are conscious that the things they say, because they haven't the ability to critical think, they will be held in persecution for the things they said previously if they misspeak. And I think those are, and also people just aren't focused on ideology. People are focused on trivial things. So I think those three points are maybe the core reasons as to why.
Yeah. No, fair point, man. I could talk with you for hours, man, because you're on the level. You know, you can see it from both aspects, and at least you're open, right? Again, I'm not here to convince you that the police is the best, because quite frankly, we're not. Nothing is. No institution ever will be. But at least you're willing to talk, and man, that's what we need, like, especially now. People are like to me, you know, all the protests and I used to be a public order officer, but I don't do it anymore, just my position. And they were like, you know, if you were going to go on the BLM march, I'm like, well, firstly, I have to protect people and protect property. That's my kind of first role and duty. But I'm not there to go and beat people up. They're like, of course you are. You're part of the institution. I'm like, no. Like, I would only use force if necessary. Some, as you said, bad eggs, slightly different, but I can't talk for them. Let's have this conversation. And then because of the herd mentality, people just aren't willing to talk. And you think, well, you've already lost, mate. If I'm saying to you, I'm willing to talk, and if you're saying, nah, you know, F you, you're part of the institution, then I think I know who's the winner here. And it's not the institution, and it's not you.
And also, historically speaking, protesting has done nothing to push the plight of oppressed people. It's a very like knee-jerk reaction. It's a let's do something with no critical thought, no organizational thing. The main thing we're battling here is an ideology, socio-economical, political, and economic. And people aren't focused on those three things. Protesting does nothing, which is why I tell my friends, and people think I'm a radical in my thinking. I'm not. I'm just. If you were to, again, like you mentioned reading, if you were to study in the past, you realize that we had the Million Man March. We had the march when Martin Luther King was assassinated. Things changed, or optics of things changing occurred, in reality. And the most sad thing for me is our. Listen to speeches by, you know, Huey P. Newton, Kwame Ture, 30, 40 years ago. And you think, whoa, the points these young men or these men, these men are mentioning are still relevant 40, 50 years later. Like, what has really changed? Like, nothing. Nothing has changed in 40 years. So in essence, we as a people have taken our critical thinking hats off, you know, placed them off and focused ourselves on this European ideology of, you know, getting the luxury vehicles. And
this is it.
The majority of people are still suffering, and it's weird. It's weird that nobody else seems to take this into consideration. Everyone's so focused on, you know, how do I attain whiteness as best as I can? How do I buy that European car? How do I live in that, you know, European place? You know, and I have friends who've moved out of, you know, Southeast London to go move to Surrey. I'm like, yo, bro, what are you doing? that's not success to me anyway. Personally, that's not success. You just
have looked. No, mate, it comes down to basic psychology of risk and reward, right? And people think they are better than any other animal in this world, but we're just the same as Pavlov's dog. We're literally the same. Oh, biscuit, yeah, okay, fine. You get, you know, you get a five-door car, you get a bigger engine, you might get an extra bedroom. And that in itself allows you to be diverted away from the real nature of humanity, or power, at least. But people aren't going to change, bro. Like, if you look at how society is formulated, what we see as value, right? Celebrity being one of them, you know, attaining actual riches in monetary terms, gaining bigger things or gaining more technology, having the most advanced phones, whatever your little reward system is, you're literally subscribing to that. You're feeding not only the capitalism of the world, but you're feeding the people that are in power even more power. Right? Right now, the billionaires...
Their wealth has increased throughout this lockdown ridiculously.
Right? Who's it affecting again? And I was saying this to the police. I'm a bit controversial sometimes because even before the points were raised about BAME background, people being obviously killed, when I say killed, but dying off for various health reasons, I was like, oh my God, can't believe JP put that in the groups and stuff. I was like, well, yeah, I have to raise it because I'm one of them and I don't necessarily want to. I know I won't be ill, touch wood anyway, because my health is good so far. But you have to raise these points. And I'm not raising the points of just saying, oh, I can get overtime or I can get additional deliveries by Amazon, whereas other people are. And again, they're just funding that full cycle of capitalism, funding that full cycle of consumerism or the reward-based system. And they're taking away the fact of you only have so much on this earth, right? I'm going to help my friends, my family, my cause, but what are you going to do? Oh, you're just going to buy more stuff from Amazon. Well, there you go. You lost the war, mate. Stop talking to me about protest. Stop talking to me about what you want to achieve when you're trying to go to H&M every weekend or whatever shop. Just, but again, like I said, man, we can talk about this for hours because it's an important thing, but awesome. People just don't get it. Just won't. Wow.
Yeah, I'm conscious of your time. Thank you so much for this.
No, it's okay. No, I enjoy this.
Right. So I'm going to, like, I won't lie to you, message you on LinkedIn and just spam you with messages. Yeah. And also, I'm always curious as to, you know, books people have read that maybe, like, have shaped their way of thinking. So I can pick up a copy and give
them I can give you, are you reading or audiobooks? Which one's your preference?
So I think audiobooks are... Wow, thank you for taking some time to listen to all of that. I really appreciate it. Feedback makes the world go round. So what I'd like for you to do is please give us a follow on Instagram, bedroom2b. That's our socials. Please give me some feedback as to how we can improve. Alternatively, message me on LinkedIn. So AJ... surname is Alpha Lima Alpha Oscar. Feedback makes the world go round, so I'm eagerly anticipating how we can make the next few episodes much better. Again, thank you so much for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.